Welcome to the So Why podcast with Step Care Solutions. This podcast aims to explore issues and challenges as well as ideas and solutions leading to strengthening support for mental wellness and recovery. My name is Alexa Bull, Knowledge Exchange Manager at Step Care Solutions, and I will be your host for this episode. In this podcast, we will explore peer support as an integral part of effective, person-centric, recovery-oriented mental health, addictions, and substance use health systems. With a unique ability to empathize with people seeking support for their mental health, substance use health, or addictions concerns, peer support offers incredible value across the system to enhance the well-being of people and communities. Peer supporters play a major role in proactive approaches, meaningful workshops and groups, and can support navigation throughout the system as well as provide crucial support to people accessing acute services and programs. Today, we are joined by Brad Glynn, the Executive Director of LifeWise Newfoundland Labrador, formerly Channel, a mental health and addictions charity in Newfoundland and Labrador that is staffed by people with lived experience. He has lived experience of anxiety and depression, and his personal story is what inspires him to push for system change in the mental health world. Through his position at LifeWise Newfoundland Labrador, Brad serves on numerous boards, committees, and working groups, including End Homelessness St. John's, the Newfoundland and Labrador Provincial Psychiatry Services Advisory Group, and the Newfoundland and Labrador Network of Disability Organizations. He supports the amazing team at LifeWise in reducing stigma and providing hope for people with lived experience through peer support services, public education activities, and policy consultation. Before LifeWise, Brad worked as an educator for over a decade. During this time, he advocated passionately for increasing mental health and social-emotional learning in classrooms from kindergarten to grade 12. He worked extensively with teachers in multiple provinces, providing professional development and keynote sessions on the value of teaching children about reflection, empathy, and boundaries in the development of strong mental well-being. In addition to his time in education, Brad has extensive volunteer experience, including having served on the board of Happy City St. John's and holding positions on several provincial and national boards for sports associations. Let's welcome Brad Glynn to the So Why podcast for today's episode. Hi, Brad. Thanks so much for joining us today on the So Why podcast. How are you doing?
I'm doing good, Alexa. Thanks for having me here today. I look forward to having a chat with you.
Amazing. And I'm looking forward to hearing a lot about peer support today and how peer support connects to the Step Care 2.0 model as well. So just thinking we could start off really simple. If you can tell us a little bit about peer support, what peer support can look like, and how it kind of holds a unique place in the system.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, first of all, you know, lots of people involved with peer support would have their own definition, but for me, you know, peer support's the act of supporting another person or two people supporting each other through the connection of their similar experience, whether that's mental health issues, mental illness, addiction issues, without hierarchy, without power dynamics, and that there's a mutuality in that support that is offered so that both people are receiving something from it. And a couple of really core elements of peer support that I think are important are the idea of hopefulness in our knowledge base and that idea of self-determination, in that more clinical supports often advise. There's oftentimes where a hierarchy is necessary and helpful, but in peer support, when we're interacting with one another, self-determination is a really crucial piece of the puzzle because we respect the autonomy of each other, and we respect the idea that we know what we need most, and therefore we honor someone else, even if we maybe disagree with the choice they're making or see something a little bit differently than they do.
That's really amazing. I really like, you know, you mentioned about the power dynamics, sort of being different in that relationship than maybe, you know, seeking help from a professional or tapping into the experience of a professional. I also loved how you mentioned the mutuality and the hopefulness and the empowerment that happens through these peer interactions. Being able to respect each other's experiences and choices
in sort of a deep way, which I think is very unique throughout the system and something that is really valued about peer support. And the fact that it's so recovery oriented and really uplifting to people. So knowing this and knowing that StepCare 2.0 is a recovery oriented model as well, how do you see peer support fitting into a StepCare 2.0 model of care?
Well, first of all, as you just said, I think it is very unique in the system in that it is about the expertise we have as individuals because of what we've been through. And one of the things I like to point out to people is that sometimes there's this idea of there's the us and the them of the people being supported by a system and the people working in a system. And it's really a false dichotomy. You know, over 50% of us will experience some sort of mental illness or some sort of diagnosis in our lifetimes. So in a room of six people, you know, there's a 1% chance one of those people hasn't had this. And I think that's something I always like to point out to clinicians, that this dichotomy, there are different roles in the system, but we all have our lived experience. And if we don't have it ourselves, certainly a family member or a friend of us who's intimately close to us would have that. And that peer support leverages that non-clinical leading with lived experience piece. And I think the first thing peer support can do within a system such as StepCare 2.0 is it has its place in the system. Of course, you know, in StepCare 2.0, peer support is a low intensity step. The words I always like to use are proactive, it's preventative. It is about trying to get to people before that need for escalation into other steps occur. And I think as peer support has grown, you know, particularly in the last 10 to 15 years, as groups like StepCare 2.0 have come along, as the Mental Health Commission has brought more attention to it, as organizations like us here at LifeWise have gained more prominence, that role as a unique step in the system has become more and more pronounced. That sometimes the best person to talk to is a peer supporter. Sometimes a peer supporter is actually the right answer instead of a psychologist, instead of a psychiatrist, instead of a mental health nurse. And I think both individuals receiving support in the system and people working in the system are becoming more and more comfortable with that every day, that peer support is its own step and that it can just be a standalone part of this process. We're really lucky here in Newfoundland and Labrador that our organization, LifeWise, offers a full gamut of peer support services. And we see community partners and people within health authorities redirecting dozens of people to us a day because of its placement in that step. And of course, Newfoundland and Labrador is a leader in StepCare 2.0 implementation. And the first piece is that it is a unique step in the system, and being proud of that and honoring that and being comfortable with that is really important for peer supporters. And it's really important that we speak that language with confidence, because our ability to help people untangle their story is sometimes all they need. But the other thing it does is then when they get ready, if they do need more intense services, they're walking in with their story ready to be told. So that time with a clinician is likely more meaningful, likely more solution focused, and likely able to drive positive, hopeful interactions with the system, and most importantly in their lives. So I think that's the first thing, is that, you know, we need to honor its place in StepCare 2.0 as its own piece of the puzzle. And I think that's a big area of growth in the system, but I think we're seeing that continue every day, which is fantastic from where I'm standing.
I love how you mentioned that, you know, peer support being on its own step, sort of the lower intensity end of the planning framework, is really about, you know, being that proactive presence, the preventative presence, and that sometimes peer support is the right answer. As you mentioned, sometimes people just need to untangle that story to figure out what exactly is it that's bothering me right now. And just talking that through with somebody who can provide that mutual support, that lived experience support, leading with that lived experience rather than a clinical lens, is absolutely what many people need to sort of resolve that top of mind issue right away. So I really appreciate you sharing that. So, you know, thinking about peer support beyond the step. So we know peer support is on a step in the Step Care 2.0 planning framework. It's resting at step three right there at low intensity. But what about how does peer support support the entire continuum of care? So from low all the way to very high, sort of acute crisis care.
That's a great question. And really, I think the first thing I would say is peer support is everywhere. You know, there's a bus stop right outside my office. And, you know, two individuals would have a tough day sitting down and talking to each other about their day and sharing a bit of their story and empathizing and saying, oh, yeah, I've been there. That's the most informal of informal peer support. And everyone does that. And I think that's the first thing is it's another unique thing about peer support and that there's not ad hoc psychology happening at a bus stop, or there shouldn't be at least. So this idea that we all know what peer support is and what trained peer support offers, what certified peer supporters offer is, first of all, their lived experience and their story, and then the tools to ensure that what occurs is positive, that is hopeful. And at the low intensity steps, it's about those people. You know, I myself live with depression and anxiety. It's having a conversation with one of my colleagues here and just saying, you know, I can kind of feel the warning signs coming on. You know, I'm leaving the email inbox a little fuller than I would. I'm staying up a little later than I usually do. And that person going, oh, yeah, I understand that. Here's something I do when that occurs. Or have you thought about this? And that's that low intensity piece. And I think so much of the population can benefit from that. And I think honoring that part of story and that part of what we do is important, and honoring that training in that makes you better at that. And that's important. And then I think as you start to go up through the steps, there's a few things I think peer support really offers. We've already touched on one, which is that idea that the untangling of story. We all know how pressed a healthcare system can be. And therefore, if I go into a doctor with a rash on my arm, being able to explain how that rash feels, what it's looked like over the past few days, what it was like a week ago, the better I can do that, the better that doctor is able to support me. And the same is true when we're speaking about things in our mind. The better I am to explain feelings, to explain thoughts, the better I'm able to do it. And peer supporters are experts at telling their own story, which means they're also experts at helping people learn to tell their story. The second thing I think peer support does as we move up into medium and high intensity is it provides forms for trust. For example, here at LifeWise, we have staff in lots of places, but one place we have them is in the lobby, in the entrance of a day of counseling center, which means when those people enter that place, they're going to see a psychologist or a counselor of some sort. But the first person they interact with is a peer support worker. And a lot of time people interacting with the mental health system aren't always trusting of it. They may have had bad experiences. They may be self-stigmatizing themselves. It may be the first time they've gone and they have no idea what they're going to interact with. And the first person they get to interact with in this instance is a peer support worker who can sit with them and talk through it as an expert in understanding the system because they're working within it, but also understanding the system as a service user, as someone who's been using it. And I think that trust, particularly at the medium level, when people are starting to move in to using more clinical supports more consistently, that trust the peer supporters offer and that credibility, really, that this is a safe place. These people are going to treat you like a person. They're going to be recovery focused because unfortunately, not everyone has had those experiences in the past. And then the third thing I would say, you know, when you get up to the high intensity pieces, I think peer supporters are also experts at de-escalation. You know, we don't drive into trauma. We're not about digging into your past. We're not a crisis sort of intervention. And at the same time, people in inpatient units, people who are being supported by Factor Act teams, again, have had certain experiences of the system. And unfortunately, a lot of those experiences have been stigmatizing. So using a peer support very closely in concert with those higher level clinical intensity supports is going to allow someone to just take a breath. It's not just me against them. It's not me and them. It's an us, because they may not see that fact that that psychologist, that psychiatrist, that mental health nurse, that police officer, whoever it is, they've got lived experience too. They're looking at those people as their title often, but a peer supporter comes at it from a totally different angle. And then after the fact, right, you're seeing a psychiatrist, maybe you're struggling with taking your medication, maybe you don't trust it, maybe scheduling is a problem. So a call to a warm line and that conversation with, you know, do you have tips about how to do it? I've started taking this medication and these are the side effects. Peer supporters are just this great complement, this great tool in a tool chest that provides this holistic person-centered care. And I think that's where the explosion in peer support services is going to occur in the next decade or so. As we found our place as a step, these other steps are now understanding, wow, there's an untapped treasure chest here that we can use at all these steps. And I think, again, it's only as effective as it serves the person. And I think peer support can serve the person at every step of Step Care 2.0, and in ways that we're just figuring out and in ways we haven't even thought of yet.
I think you mentioned a number of important points there to kind of pull out. The first thing that you mentioned, which, you know, sometimes people who may not work in the sector might not be aware, but there are very informal peer interactions that are definitely still valuable and important throughout the system. They occur really naturally, like you mentioned, at a bus stop. And then there's trained peer support, which you pulled out. And I think it's important to make that distinction, because many peer supporters do have formal training. And like you said, they still use their lived experience in a very real way, but maybe a little support to really articulate their story well, with the emphasis on inspiring hope, leaving with something positive, responding and listening effectively to folks who are trying to share with them. And I think that's a really important point to highlight, because not everybody is aware that many peer supporters throughout the system have really great training and are really good at what they do and really good at connecting with people through their own experience. So I appreciate you kind of pulling that out a little bit and putting it to the forefront. As well as, I like how you mentioned, because that person knows how to tell their story and has received that training, they then can help the person to also articulate their story really clearly so that they can get the help that they need if they do need to engage with some of those higher intensity level services that are available to them. And then I love that form of trust, right? The form of trust where, you know, they've got somebody that they can connect with on a personal level. It helps build that comfort. Stigma still exists, and it exists very heavily toward ourselves. When we need to seek help, sometimes we stigmatize ourselves so heavily, but having that peer supporter there with us throughout can really help bring that stigma down and kind of normalize it for us so that we're able to open up effectively. You mentioned a couple of things that I just thought I would pull out to see if you could give us some more information in case our listeners don't know what they are. You mentioned ACT and FACT teams, and I wonder if you could kind of explain that a little bit, and then how peer support kind of plays a role in that. And you also mentioned warm lines, which are really cool. And I think our listeners would benefit of hearing a little bit about that too, especially if they're not aware that they do exist and how helpful they actually can be.
Absolutely, Alexa. So I'll start with ACT and FACT teams. So ACT and FACT are acronyms. It's funny, I don't really like acronyms, so it's funny that I did that. But ACT stands for Assertive Community Treatment, and FACT is Flexible Assertive Community Treatment, which is really, FACT is sort of the next evolution of ACT teams. So for example, in Newfoundland and Labrador, we have and ACT teams functioning in the province. And these are teams that are holistic healthcare teams. They include peer supporters in our province, thanks to the confidence our regional health authorities have in peer support. They'll have mental health nurses. They'll have social workers. They might have parole officers attached to them. They'll usually have a psychiatrist attached to them, and any gambit of people. And these teams carry, you know, to use the clinical word, a caseload of individuals. We would call them peers. And these ACT and FACT teams support these peers in living in community. Perhaps they were inpatient before. Perhaps they're people who could potentially become inpatient depending on life circumstances. Perhaps they lived in corrections beforehand. And they're just people who need a little bit of support to ensure that their mental wellness is maintained. And so those teams kind of function in that capacity. And LifeWise is partnered with regional health authorities here for about 2 years. We actually have 12 peer supporters stationed on FACT and ACT teams in our province. And again, the feedback we constantly get is two things. First of all, how great it is for the peers to have someone at that table who is serving a different purpose on purpose. Because again, there's other people on that team with lived experience, but it's right for them to serve their role. And the second piece is how helpful the clinical staff has said it is to have that peer supporter at the table as they're discussing files, as they're discussing the peers that they're working with, to give a different perspective, maybe to challenge the status quo, maybe to say, hey, have you looked at it this way? And therefore, the benefit is first to the peer, but also to clinicians as they continue to learn and evolve in recovery-focused, person-centered care. So that's kind of what an ACT and FACT team is. And then a warm line is near and dear to our heart because, LifeWise and previously we were called Channel has been around since 1989, but we really exploded in the peer support scene with the creation of a warm line about 7 years ago. And a warm line is, it's a line in our context operated by people with lived experience. In our experience, it is operated by paid and certified peer supporters. And essentially, it's called a warm line because it's not a hotline. So if someone's in crisis, if someone's really struggling with suicidal ideation, a warm line is not the place for them to go. If that's the only number you know, though, call the warm line because they'll get you the support you need. But a warm line is a place to call. And again, words like preventative, words like proactive, tell your story, to talk about what's going on. It's not about delving into your trauma. It's about trying to see what's going on and be solution focused in your day, in your life. And for us, it's so rewarding to see the connection the peers form with us. There are peers who call our warm line fairly consistently. And then there are new peers. About 20 to 25% of our calls are our new peers. And the most common reason for a call on our warm line is actually isolation, loneliness, people feeling disconnected. And we've seen an increase in that, of course, over the past 2.5 years with the pandemic. The second biggest reason is family issues or friend issues. And then the third biggest reason people call our warm line is actually they'll name that it's directly related to a mental illness point. So anyone can call a warm line. We often use the tagline, are you struggling? Call our warm line. But then we always follow that up with, maybe even better to call us before you're struggling because we can get you there. So a warm line is just, again, a preventative, proactive, low intensity measure. And we also are great at helping people navigate the system, letting them know community supports, clinical supports that are out there and connecting them within the system.
That's amazing. Thank you so much for breaking those out for us and just giving us a little bit more detail. I will definitely put some warm lines in the show notes for this podcast so that if folks want or need to check them out and see how they work for you, they will be available to you right there. So you've talked a little bit about LifeWise and formerly Channel, and I know that your organization has played a big role in the implementation of StepCare 2.0 in Newfoundland and that you have lots of diverse programming to support different levels of intensity across the whole spectrum of care, which is absolutely fantastic and amazing. And I'm wondering if you could share with us some examples of different types of programming that you offer that would support or function along the continuum of care or intersect with other sectors like justice to help support mental health and well-being.
Absolutely. You've hit the stuff that I'm really good at talking about now, which is, bragging about the wonderful work that our team do here and our wonderful staff. Again, first of all, we're sort of most well known for our warm line, which I would say is a low intensity step. We receive, 800 to 900 calls a month on it, which is a fairly large call load. It's for the province of Newfoundland and Labrador. We do get some calls from outside the province, even from outside the country, actually. but largely the population in Newfoundland and Labrador utilize it. In addition to that, you know, we have four offices throughout the province where we offer in-person groups. We offer one-on-one sessions that can be scheduled or walk-in. And again, I still largely view those as lower intensity. At our groups, it's not a place to dive into your trauma. It's a place to build skills, to share some of your story, and to learn maybe a session will be on self-advocacy. How to be willing to say that thing to your psychiatrist, how to be willing to tell your boss that you need some support for your mental wellness. And those are kind of our in-house services. Since the pandemic, all those have become virtual as well, which allows us to connect anyone throughout the province, which is nice because rural and remote areas are often the places that struggle the most to receive any level of service. So we're proud to be able to do that. In addition to that, again, as I did mention, we have 12 peer supporters working on FACT and ACT, working in community with the regional health authorities. And that's a medium intensity piece of work. A lot of the interactions are probably low intensity, but they are generally peers who are perhaps going through some things at the time. So the support is in concert with other professionals, which is important. In addition to that, two other things I always like to highlight is we do have a peer support position at the mental health hospital here in St. John's. We have a peer support position that works on two or three of the floors there, just interacting with the peers who are living inpatient. They may go down to what we call the PAU, which is kind of the intake section. And again, offering that support for someone who may have never been in that place before, or maybe they've been there before and had a negative interaction. And for us, we see a peer supporter being on every floor in every hospital in the province because we see such value. And the other thing our peer supporters point out in that is they often spend, you know, a fair bit of their shift also working with the healthcare workers. You know, when nurses just had a tough interaction, you know, maybe security's had to be involved in something, maybe a psychiatrist feels like they didn't approach someone the right way for a first interaction. And again, our peer supporters are experts at helping people untangle their story. And there's no qualification to who that is. So I always say that. And luckily, the two peer support workers we have down at our inpatient unit are just phenomenal, and they're willing to do that. And then the last place I always like to highlight is in partnership with a community partner, Stella Circle, which is a very large nonprofit in St. John's. We actually have a peer supporter contracted out to them who works at the Just Us Women's Center. And she supports women who've just finished living in corrections and are reintroducing themselves to living on their own, perhaps in some transitional housing. And they're just building those skills again. They're building their resumes. They're building their confidence. And our peer supporter works there with them. And that program's been so successful, even though it's relatively new, that we actually think there's growth going to come there. So what we always say when we talk about our services is, it's clear you can put a peer support anywhere. And I will say, if we ever get that magical funder who's willing to, you know, give us all the money, then, you know, we're not going to struggle to figure out what to do with that money. We're going to pick up the phone and say, you should have a peer supporter in your lobby and you should have a peer supporter on your floor. And then we're just going to send them out. And that fits with that Step Care 2.0 model of its own step. And it's a great wraparound service that holistically supports the other steps of the system, because most importantly, it centers on the person. And a peer supporter is almost a living symbol. They're a personification of the fact we're supposed to be person-centered. They're a personification of the fact recovery occurs and hope is possible and our stories have positive elements. And I think that personification, that symbol, is so important, because it's a reminder to people utilizing services and the people giving the services that, wow, there's value in story, there's value in lived experience, there's value in someone's experience of mental illness, there's value in someone's experience of addiction, even if all the story isn't great and even if all the story isn't what you want it to be.
That's so true. There's something so special about a personal story. It's so easy to connect to, no matter who you are. And as people, we're natural storytellers. We naturally gravitate towards stories. So I think that's such an important element that you've brought up about peer support. And I love how you're talking about peer supporters supporting everyone, the professionals who are working in these environments, and just, again, using that skill set, that lived experience skill set, to just add to the environment, regardless of which service is being offered at the time, but they're adding value in that service and really, again, bringing it back to ensuring that the focus is on the person and that that person has what they need at that point in time so that they can live well. So that they can work toward their own well-being in their own way, which is unique for everyone because we all have a unique journey. And then you mentioned the personification of hope. When you hear these different stories, you know, the bad and the good of the story, but they're infused with that hope, it helps people to connect their own story with another story and see that even though my story is not the same as your story, there's still elements in it that could be the same or could be similar. I can now feel that hope because you did have a low part in your story and it didn't stay low, right? So in my story, I also can now have hope that it won't stay low. It can get better. So I really want to appreciate you today for spending time with us, sharing with us about everything that you do, and just the value that peer support brings across the entire system, whether it's on its own step or it's working together in different services to provide higher or lower intensity services as well. So really appreciate your time, Brad. Really appreciate your contributions and sharing the greatness that is peer support.
Thanks so much for having me, Alexa. And again, I appreciate all the work Stepcare 2.0 does in bringing us towards a more recovery-focused system.
Thank you once again for joining us on the So Why podcast with Stepcare Solutions. For more information on the Stepcare 2.0 model, the Wellness Together Canada portal, as well as links to resources mentioned in this episode, please check out the show notes below. Thanks for tuning in once again. We look forward to having you back next time.